You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
Welcome. You are watching and listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. It's 5/22/21. And well, interesting things going on in the precious metals markets, inflation, Basel III. What will that do to the bullion banks? So many things happening all at once. I'd like to get your view on things. Why don't you send us an email to kl@carrielutz.com. Right now, our good friend Andy Scheckman is with us. You find him at milesfranklin.com, a reputable bullion dealer that I've been dealing with for over a decade now, Andy. And hey, first, you mentioned something about Perth Mint and there's revelations coming out of there. I haven't honestly gotten up to speed on that story. What's going on with Perth Mint? They were like the gold standard of gold mints till recently.
Yeah, well, you know, it started a few months ago. First of all, thanks for having me back, Carrie. It's good to see you. It started a few months ago. This man named John Adams, who's really done a yeoman's job of shedding light upon what's going on at Perth Mint. And most of it is centered around their unallocated program, their pooled account program. And people, when they have been trying to convert from unallocated to allocated, first step of the process is to fabricate. Fabrication is taking months upon months, 3, 6, 9 months, and in some cases, rumors are that just not available to be done right now. So when you talk about an unallocated synthetic program, or you know, what is being intimated is the word rehypothecation, that these unallocated accounts are sold many times over to the same people, that there's not enough metal behind it for as many shares as have been issued. And this is what John has been talking about for quite some time. He also talked about Kitco and some others. But recently, Perth issued their annual report. And Rob Keynes of goldsilverpros.com published an article about this the other night in a YouTube video, basically showing that the Perth Mint does not have as much metal as they report to have, that they've lent a tremendous amount out. They've shorted it and lent it out. And not only that, they don't even have the cash to cover it all. It is... it's a big problem. It's rehypothecation, and it is caught in a pickle where they've lent out more gold than they have on the books as liabilities against open accounts. And so if everyone, in essence, were to run to the door at once saying, give me my metal, many people will be left holding the bag. Now, this is information taken directly out of the Perth Mint's annual report. Rob was a former auditor, went through the numbers, and basically has proven that there's a big problem with these unallocated accounts, and Perth being really the big one. You're talking a government mint who is really caught in a pickle. So this is one of the big reasons why you stay away from unallocated accounts, synthetic unallocated accounts. It's a big, big problem. They're fine when... you know, no one is requesting delivery of the metal. And, you know, I guess you could make the analogy. So was Madoff's program when no one was requesting distributions. Everything worked out just fine. But when everyone starts realizing that there are problems with unallocated accounts and requesting allocation or delivery, very quickly you see the emperor has no clothes. And this is exactly what Rob Keynes has done. GATA just actually published something about this last night, highlighting Rob's article. I suggest everyone take a look at it. If you own an unallocated Perth Mint account, I would think very closely about or very hard about what Rob is having to say. And look, as a caveat to all of this, the Perth Mint over the last 2 years in terms of physical delivery, as far as I'm concerned, has been a godsend. We have sold more kangaroos than just about anything in terms of silver over the past 15 months. But that's different than their unallocated synthetic Perth Mint program. The Perth Mint certificate, in all the years I've done this, I've only met two people that have a allocated account. Everyone else does unallocated. And it's free storage. And I'll tell you, as someone who's run a Brinks program in Canada and the U.S. for the past 11 years, in storage, there's nothing that's free, ever. And so I think it's starting to come into focus that there are some problems with these unallocated accounts. And by their own numbers, evidently, there are some big problems at Perth. So don't be the last one out the door. If you own this stuff, either request fabrication, allocation, or move it to a program whereby it is allocated, segregated to your name. And that's really very important right now, because I think counterparty risk is really going to be the name of the game or the central focus of storage accounts moving forward. And, I think that you can see that by what's happening on COMEX, as we're seeing a massive rush to get metal out of COMEX and remove that counterparty risk. So if you're going to have someone store it for you, it needs to be segregated. It needs to be allocated, and you have to be able to go get it if you want it or have it shipped immediately. These are very, very important things to consider, none of which really apply to Perth Mint certificates.
Hey, so I have a great idea for Perth Mint. This will solve the entire problem. Here's what they do. They create a cryptocurrency called Tulip Ponzi Madoff. Okay.
Yeah, Tulip exactly. Ponzi
Madoff coin, and they pay off all their debts in crypto that they would have otherwise owed in gold. That would be that. What I'm looking at here, Andy, is if Perth is no good, then this thing is going to spread. It's going to spread to the ETFs other than Sprott. Sprott, we can pretty well take to the bank the metals there, because he's totally transparent, and maybe gold money too. But when it comes to anyone else, ETFs or anything else unallocated, like you mentioned, Kitco, and there's other ones out there. I think some of the Canadian banks had unallocated gold accounts as well. An unallocated ounce of gold isn't worth the paper that it's been rehypothecated on 20 times over, right?
Yeah, well, and if you look at something like GLD and SLV, these are both, not only are they unallocated, there is no direct ownership, really, unless you take out tremendous amounts, they're called baskets, you can't ever take possession of the metal that is being held. And they're also a tool for the commercial banks to rig the price of gold and silver. I'll give you an example. February 2nd of last year, there was more influx, February 1st and 2nd, into SLV than ever in the history of the account. This is when all of the online dealers, and myself included, shut down over the weekend because the demand was so high that none of us were prepared on Friday's close, when we hedge our book over the weekend, to accept all the business. You had silver at $30 for the first time in quite some time, and the demand was unlike anything I've ever seen in 31 years. We received more phone calls that day than ever in the history of our company. We were taking phone calls late into the evening all weekend long.
I remember I talked to you that day. Well, that Sunday, right. I talked to you, and you were like sprawled out on a chair. I think you had an ice pack on your head to make your brain stop swelling. I mean, it was nuts.
Well, when that happened and you have all these inflows into SLV, the next day, that Sunday night into Monday morning, and the access market, it's called, where New York is not open yet. London PM fix happens. London closes. So you're in the access between London and New York, where there's really no trading. It's incredibly thin. Someone dumped a year and a half's worth of almost 2 years worth of silver mine supply, 1.5 billion ounces, onto the market. This is not how trades are done. This is guaranteeing the worst execution possible. So over the as the, so you have suck everyone in, and then they smash down the price. And over the next 2 weeks, the commercial banks sucked out 90 million ounces of silver out the back door out of SLV. So they sell it, they earn the money for it, then they sell naked short to drive the price down, and then they pull the real metal out at $4 an ounce cheaper. And so when you talk about nefarious products, if you were to read the prospectus of SLV and GLD, I believe it's pages 6 through 12 titled Risk Factors, you will notice things in there that if you really read it, would make you never, ever, ever own it. In fact, you would sell it immediately if you did own it. I was just glancing at the headline from GATA, and it says, Rob Keentz of GoldSilverPros.com reports that this week in the detailed review with an accountant from the Perth Mint's latest annual report shows that the Mint does not have all the metal it claims to vault for customers, nor enough cash to cover the difference. And that the Mint is lending huge amounts of metal to unidentified entities. So they lend the metal. And when you factor that into the amount, and who are these entities? Are they giving it to the exchanges? Because I'll remember, not this year, but last year, 2020, when the U.S. Mint, or excuse me, when the COMEX was running out of gold and they had to create a new contract with the London Metals Exchange, basically allowing for fractional interest in a 400-ounce gold bar. You can Google this and you'll see that the Perth Mint sent over truck boatloads full of kilo bars to the COMEX. So the Perth Mint has been lending their metal while at the same time accepting orders in their unallocated program. And when you put the two and two together, you see that their liabilities are way outstripping the metal that they have in their customers' names. So this is a problem when the rubber meets the road. This is the same kind of thing that we're seeing in all of these unallocated programs, which just allows the price to not find its, you know, it's, we can't find price discovery in this environment with all these unallocated programs. And one of the things that we're seeing is a proliferation into things like PSLV and PHYS, the real ETFs that have money and metal backed behind it, instead of these rehypothecated, synthetic, unallocated, basically scams. And so, you know, there is no substitute for the real thing. If you're going to own a paper derivative, in my mind, I agree with you. PSLV, PHYS are the only two that I would choose. But, you know, if things get really bad, do you want stock in Kellogg's or boxes of Frosted Flakes? And that's really what I think is the argument for owning physical metal in this environment where it's becoming so incredibly hard to find.
Totally. Hey, I want to go back for a second. I want to apologize to Madoff and Ponzi, because they were like small-time operators. They really, you know, Madoff, he pulled it off for 20 years. But compared to what's going on now, they were pikers. So it really doesn't do their memories justice to compare them to what is going on with all these unallocated outfits. I don't even know how many there are. But like I said, an unallocated ounce of gold, you know, is not worth the paper that it's not printed on. It's worthless. All right. Yes, it's worth something until one day you go to get it and then forget about it. And that's the problem with the futures markets, the exchanges.
Not only that, I guess I'd like to make one other comment. I got a kick out of this. I think there's a lot of unsophisticated money managers out there that that help promote these unallocated accounts. Let me give you an example. When I started in this industry in 1990, people who sold stocks were called stockbrokers, not money managers. There might have been one or two money managers in the whole firm of a stock brokerage. These are the gray hairs that had been there forever. But most people who sold stocks made their money on the transaction, a 1% typically on the sale or purchase of a stock. Yeah. Right. And obviously, as the internet came along, and I started this before the, now it's Franklin, before the internet, that makes me feel really old. But it in the late 90s, early 90s, anyways, when we started, 1991, they were stockbrokers. Well, when Scott Trade came along and said, we'll do these same trades for $9, stockbrokers became money managers. And it was a simple test on ethics that now allowed you to become a money manager, which was the easiest test I've ever taken, a financial advisor, I should say. And I guess it's been my opinion that in large part, and I'm not casting this upon all financial advisors, but in large part, many of them know more and more, learn more and more about less and less till it seems they know everything about nothing. And the other day I was looking at an email from a client of mine who had received a email from his money manager, who basically said, you know, they were talking about precious metals. And he said, listen, you know, why don't we just get you some physical gold and silver through GLD and SLV? Now, here's the point. That's a contradiction in terms. But you have money managers that continue to promote GLD and SLV, and they're unsophisticated. A lot of people who have access or not access positions in GLD and SLV are going to wake up one day and be very unhappy to find that, you know, they're left holding the bag, that they really don't have any physical metal exposure. And these types of programs that are synthetic, that are unallocated, all they are at best is a kind of a half-assed price representation of it, not the real thing. And I guess what I would just simply say to people is that if you have GLD and SLV, read the prospectuses, pages 6 through 12, titled Risk Factors. Own the real thing. If you have it stored, make sure it is allocated to your name. Make sure you have the ability to go get it, because these things are starting to blow up, and we're seeing more and more and more and more talk about it from Perth to Kitco to the UK Mint, their programs, to many others. And I think it's going to become more and more and more center stage in terms of counterparty risk. So mitigate that. Do what you can to own the real thing and take possession of it.
Hey, just think of how much money you could have made all these years, Andy, if you were in the unallocated gold storage business, because nobody knows whether you have the metal or not, and you save a fortune in shipping, right? You don't have to ship anything. You just send them a digital trade confirmation, and that's it, right?
Don't just survive. Thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Fury Gold Mines is a Canada-focused exploration and development company committed to aggressively growing its scalable high-grade gold assets with major drill campaigns planned across its 3.5 million ounce portfolio. Fury is led by a management team of proven explorers and developers with a track record of success in advancing and financing project development. Fury Gold Mines is well positioned to create value for investors with low-risk development growth and the potential for a new major discovery. Fury Gold Mines trades on the TSX and NYSE American under the ticker FURY. To learn more, go to furygoldmines.com. That's furygoldmines.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
Yeah, well, if you look, even a bank like Morgan Stanley, 8-9 years ago, a big commercial bank, one that is respected, right? Well, they pled guilty and paid a huge fine for charging their clients storage fees for metal that they never even purchased or purchased something completely different. So to think that this is just isolated, it really isn't. And you know, these banks feel that they have enough money to cover, I guess, these entities feel they have enough money and to cover people wanting to take possession. But the thing is, when everyone wants to take possession, when the whole program comes under fire, that's when problems happen. And I would argue that this is where we are heading right now. Just go check out the stuff that John Adams has been saying. He's been issued a cease and desist by Kitco, yet everything he seems to be saying is rooted in facts. And it's really hard to dispute what he's saying. And he's a brave guy. He's taken on some pretty big entities. And I guess we'll have to see how it all plays out. But I guess I would just simply say,
If you don't have it in your possession, really, you don't own it. Or
if you have to have it stored, just make damn sure it is segregated in your name with a certificate, and you have ability to retrieve it whenever you want. Whether you go and pick it up at the vault or have it shipped to you, you just have to be able to retrieve it promptly. And that really, to me, is the hallmark of a good storage facility.
Hey, totally. And there's all too few of them in the world now. Well, we kind of got into that, but let's talk about inflation for a little bit. It seems like, I lived through the 70s. I remember inflation very well. And I remember the run up in gold prices until it was crashed by whomever. But point is that we're kind of going through this again now, aren't we?
Well, if we talk about 1979, 1980, the run up, the gold was crashed by Paul Volcker, who raised interest rates to nearly 20%. He's maybe the last real, I don't even know if I call him a politician, that had the courage to do what needed to be done. Now, can you imagine if Jerome Powell raised interest rates to 17%, 18%, what would happen in this market? Back then, you had inverse relationships between stocks and bonds. They were called risk on, risk off. Right now, for the first time I can ever remember, stocks and bonds are both positively correlated to one another. There is no inverse relationship, because if interest rates rise, both markets collapse. At the same time, you can throw real estate into that. That's a dangerous scenario. That's a dangerous environment, because interest rates have really nowhere to go but decidingly negative or higher. And I guess when you look at a 10-year treasury at 150 basis points issued by an insolvent government who, has created $7 trillion worth of newly printed money just over the last year, and another $4 trillion on the docket through infrastructure and care programs, you're talking an insolvent government that's eviscerating the value of the currency, with inflation running 3 or 4 times, if you listen to John Williams, above what they're paying in a coupon rate. No one would ever buy it. Interest rates ultimately have to rise, either through flat out inflation and monetization of the treasury market by the Fed, or just by the Fed backing away and not being the buyer of last resort, propping up the back end of the market, keeping interest rates low. It's a very precarious situation, but they can't raise interest rates to attack inflation and to knock down the gold bull this time. That's why I believe until you see interest rates above the rate of inflation, not the CPI nonsense, but the real numbers, there's plenty of room left to go in the gold and silver bull market. When you factor that against the movement we see with the biggest money in the world accumulating it, we are a long ways away from the gold and silver bull dying. And when we talk about inflation, look, a trillion seconds ago was 31,688 years ago. So when you talk about, just willy-nilly printing another $4 trillion on top of the $7 trillion that were printed over the last 12 months, plus, this is a big problem, a huge problem, and we're seeing it in certain segments. It's not broad yet because of the lack of velocity, but I'll give you an example of where we're seeing it. I moved into this new home. You can hear them doing work behind me. I hope that's not too loud. But the just getting furniture, as an example, for a new home takes months upon months upon months at much higher prices. And I have a client who is a big home developer in Texas who told me that they have to have, he just closed a $2.5 million home with a dorm fridge in the kitchen because they couldn't even get refrigerators. The only way that they could close was to have a tiny little refrigerator in the kitchen just so the bank would sign off on it. But you're seeing massive inflation in things like lumber and in beef and price inflation in things like appliances and in furniture. And with how high all of the commodities have risen in terms of inflation and their prices, you'll start to see that more into everyday goods. And I think that's coming. No question about it. I think that inflation is going to be really something that is going to catch a lot of people off guard, because we're going to wake up one day and find it is certainly not transitory, that it's here to stay. Yesterday or the day before, Jerome Powell talked about the possible issuance of a cryptocurrency, a Fed coin. When that happens, that's when you see full-blown inflation. Because as it is right now, the only way money is created is if it's lent into existence by the commercial banks. The commercial banks who sell their bonds to the Fed creates money out of nowhere to buy those bonds. That's quantitative easing. That in and of itself, before you get to the next piece, lowers interest rates and stabilizes the bond market when the Fed comes in and buys the back end of it. But then the last piece of the puzzle where money gets issued into the real economy is when the banks lend it. But going back to what I was saying about, you know, this economy and where rates are, the banks don't want to lend the money into this economy. You've had that experience with buying a new home, and so have I.
Sure.
There's too much risk out there. Their balance sheets have been destroyed. They'd rather keep it at the Fed earning 150 basis points with no risk rather than lend it to you and I for double that rate, but with all the risk that comes in with bankruptcy and foreclosure, something that they've had to deal with over the last year and a half. And so when the banks don't lend, that is actually deflationary, where the Fed pulls the bonds out of the market, pulls the liquidity out, and the banks then send the money back to the Fed in a reserve account. So the Fed doesn't like that. That's why you're going to see, I believe, conversation more and more and more about a digital Fed dollar, where they can then take monetary policy into their own hands, spend the money into existence, and which is something they want. They want inflation, because we're so far down the debt rabbit hole that there really is no way out other than inflation or default. And if the banks won't play ball with them in terms of their inflation agenda, then they'll take it into their own hands. And I think that's what we're going to see. Name of the game is you will see inflation. But I would like to just say one thing. Whether we see massive inflation, like I think we will, or a Great Depression, like some people think we will, the opposite side of the coin with massive deflation, let's not forget that precious metals are really one of the only assets in the world that are not simultaneously someone else's liability. So from a deflationary standpoint, when you talk about deflation and depression, counterparty risk is the biggest problem, where everyone goes bust and defaults. There is no counterparty risk with an ounce of gold or an ounce of silver. So whether it's inflation or deflation, hyperinflation or depression, you need to have some precious metals, and you need to mitigate your exposure to a currency that's roughly $140 trillion in debt at the lowest interest rates in human history.
Yeah, I cannot agree with you more, that's for sure. We've seen this thing going on for a long time. We've been warning you about it, and finally it's here. Nobody particularly wanted it to be here, but this is what your government has done, and you need to be prepared for it. I can't emphasize enough, go over to milesfranklin.com, check out their prices, check out what they've got available, send Andy an email. It's andy@milesfranklin.com. That's the only place where I buy my metals. Tell them I sent you. I get a little present from Andy on occasion. Not very much, not very often, but it's always nice to get. And, you know, I believe in what Andy does, to the point he's the only licensed bullion dealer, licensed and bonded in the nation and perhaps the world for all I know, but certainly in the nation, because having been in Minnesota, Andy, you were required to get become a licensed bullion dealer, have background checks annually for you and all your employees, and to post a bond. So you really can't be more protected than buying metals from Andy. I just got some recently, sent him some scrap. That's another thing. If you've got scrap, highly, highly recommend convert it to bullion coins now. You can always do it whenever, but it might be more difficult in the future, especially if some of these mints and depositories start closing down because they've been found out by the public. So I would urge you, if you got scrap, call Andy up. He'll tell you exactly how to handle it. You're not going to get ripped off like these cash for gold people that take like 25%, which is outrageous. And you'll wind up with some tradable or usable bullion coins, whether it's gold or silver. I would just urge you to do it. Probably doesn't make much sense to melt down your silver yet. Doesn't make any sense to melt down your copper yet. But we didn't even talk about inflation and copper, Andy, and inflation in lumber and all these other things. But the inflation is upon us. Hey, I only hope it's transitory, but I don't believe in fairy tales, and I certainly don't believe anything the Federal Reserve or the U.S. government or any other government, for that matter, tells me. You have to make your own decisions. In any event, just go over there, milesfranklin.com. Andy's email address again, and I urge you to do it quickly. Andy@milesfranklin.com. Andy, it's always a pleasure to have you on, man. Thank you so much. We'll talk next time about what's really going on with Basel III, and as far as the LBMA, the bullion banks, and the COMEX. But hey,
give me 10 seconds. I know that's not what you're asking for here, but just give me 10 seconds on that real quick. June 28th is when these new net stabilization ratios go into effect. In a nutshell, what you're talking about on Basel III, which I believe was the biggest event of my career when they reclassified gold as a tier one reserve asset. But on June 28th of this year, the net stabilization ratios go into effect. The London Metals Exchange is a unallocated 100-to-1 synthetic program by their own admission, 100-to-1. So it's rehypothecated. If 100 people say, give me my gold, 99 don't get it. June 28th, the Bank of International Settlements is mandating an 85% collateral position limit mandate. So all of these banks that have been naked shorting with nothing behind it have to have a 85% collateral position behind it. It de-incentivizes them considerably, remarkably, to not naked short. So we'll come back and we'll talk about that next time. One last thing, we are building a new website. It is almost done. When you go to milesfranklin.com, you can see some products we have, albeit the online store is disabled. Send us an email. We will send you a current inventory. We'll make sure prices are as competitive or better than anyone in the country. You'll receive an email directly from me or one of my brokers I have personally trained. Carrie, I appreciate being here. Always do. And I hope to see you in person over the next couple of weeks here in Florida.
Yeah, well, we're neighbors now, so that will definitely happen. You be well, Andy. Keep up the fight. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Take care, buddy.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.